When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello and welcome to this first episode of a close reading series on satire from the London Review of Books. I'm Claire Bucknell and I'm a fellow of All Souls College, Oxford and a contributor to the paper. And I'm joined here by Colin Burrow, also a fellow of All Souls, who has been writing for the paper since the last century.
Thank you very much for reminding me of that fact, Claire. I'm not that old. And we're sitting in my room in college with books. And you'll be able to hear the delicious sound of those books in the background, I'm sure.
Colin, talk me through some of the delights to come in this series.
Well, we've got all kinds of things. A rich satura or smorgasbord of delights to come. We're going to talk about John Donne. We're going to extend through the 18th century with Pope and all kinds of wicked people like Sterne. And we're going to talk about Jane Austen, and we're going to talk about Muriel Spark, and it's going to be great.
Fantastic. I can't wait.
There'll be a satirical twinkle in my eye throughout.
I hope not.
Anyway, the real question that I want to ask you before we get down to talking about Erasmus's Praise of Folly, which we're going to do today, is a very straightforward question, which I'm sure you'll be able to answer, which is, what is satire? I'll hand over to you at that point, Claire, and leave the room.
Oh, I was really hoping you weren't going to ask me that. Difficult to answer, for one thing, because there is more than one etymology at play. The Latin word satura, which Colin just mentioned, just means a plate of stuff. So on that reading, satire is a mixture. It's a kind of a feast in which kind of anything goes, and miscellaneity and surprise is sort of part of the point.
So gallimaufry.
Yes, if you will, a gallimaufry. Mm-hmm. But if you asked a Renaissance scholar or satirist, they might say that satire derived from the word satyra or satyr. And these were satyrs, so hairy, drunken, unruly creatures who you might find in the woods, whose image accorded with the sort of bad boy status of the angry young men who wrote satire at the end of the 16th century.
And we're going to be talking about those in our next episode, aren't we?
We are. We're going to come round to Donne et al.
Yeah.
So in 1589, George Puttenham, who wrote a lot about rhetoric, he said, "The first and most bitter invective against vice and vicious men was the satire, in which they made wise as if the gods of the woods, whom they called satyrs or sylvans, should appear and recite those verses of rebuke, whereas indeed they were but disguised persons under the shape of satyrs."
And that's a really important passage, actually, because Puttenham, in his Art of English Poesy, puts satire right first. It's the first genre, it's the first thing that people did. They were nasty to each other in verse.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
And so then those two etymologies give us the kind of double vision that you have to adopt or keep in mind when you're reading satire. So on the one hand, it is ultra civilized. It's a mezze. It's a plate of tapas. It's a kind of smorgasbord. But on the other hand, it's this unruly, wild creature out to snarl and snap. And you can't always be sure which you're going to get.
Oh, yes. Whether you're going to be fed or bitten. It's a good combination, though, isn't it? So, in a way, then, part of the point about satire and our excuse for not being able to define it completely is that, you know, the point is that you don't quite know how to take it. It's something that's slightly ungraspable, that it could be nourishing or it could be savaging or it could be a bit of both.
Yes, it's a tricky literary term because it doesn't really denote a genre of writing in the way that, say, epic does, in a way that we might feel comfortable with. It's more a mode, and it's an attitude. It's a hostile way of positioning yourself in relation to your target.
But it is sort of a genre in the verse form, isn't it? I mean, Horace and Juvenal are creating a Roman genre. So it's a genre and a mode in a rather confusing again, mixed way.
Yes, that's right. There's a rich heritage of Verse satire, and we will be coming back to that throughout our course, and we'll probably keep mentioning these names, Horace and Juvenal and Persius, and their offshoots in English. But then the word satire also covers prose satires, such as The Praise of Folly by Erasmus that we're going to talk about today, or more famously, Swift's Gulliver's Travels. And then there's this third category, which is a mixture of prose and verse, or that's called a Menippean satire. And they're named after the works of Menippus, who was a Greek satirist. We don't know exactly what they would have looked like because they've been lost, but it's clear that they would have been funny and probably also cruel.
Wicked literary history, isn't it, that the best things always get lost? But then the great thing about that is that you can imagine what Menippus was like. He was obviously really cool.
Much cooler than he probably actually was. Yeah, true. Exactly. Yeah.
Imagined works are sweeter.
And then on top of all that, you can have a satirical drama.
We'll talk about Volpone.
We'll talk about a satirical drama,
yeah.
Or a satirical epic.
Don Juan we'll be talking about too, won't we?
Or a satirical magazine such as Private Eye, and satirical novels, and satirical just about anything.
I was given a satirical pair of socks once by my brother who thinks that I don't have enough fun. So he gave me a pair of socks that have written on them in bright yellow lettering, "Carpe the fuck out of this DM." And it's clearly a satirical attack on me, but you know, so you can have satirical socks. Satirical, more or less everything. So the bottom line is it's probably easier to think of satire as more like an adjective than a noun. That's to say, its works can be satirical novels or satirical plays. And there is a narrower category of satires, which are formal verse satires. But, you know, it's an adjectival, slippery term that can be applied to other literary kinds.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. So it's nebulous, it's ungraspable, and the history of the mode/genre is full of these sort of boundary cases where you can't really be sure if satire is the right word for what you're reading. So Don Quixote, for example, is it a satire? Well, yes, but also no. Shelley's Mask of Anarchy, satire or political rant? Well, kind of could be either.
I think it's a bit of a political rant myself, but yeah, it could be either. Fair enough.
Well, Colin's just stamped on that uncertainty, but there is uncertainty there, and that is interesting, and it's generative, no matter how much he tries to crush it. And one of the things we will do in this podcast series is watch satire pull the rug out from under our feet and kind of enjoy it doing so.
That's all I was trying to do when I said I didn't think Mask of Anarchy was a satire, Claire. I was just trying to pull the rug out. I was being satirical. It's all good.
Noted. Mm-hmm. Satire is, as you've seen, it's risky, it's sometimes nasty, it can be dirty, it is often indecorous, it pushes at the limits of what is
sayable. And gets censored.
And gets censored for it.
Yeah.
So it draws attention to the boundaries, whether they be literary boundaries or moral and social boundaries, by almost overstepping them.
And sometimes radically overstepping them, actually.
Sometimes radically overstepping them.
Yeah, which is important. And we'll be talking about the political aspect of satire throughout the course, one way or another, I think. Yep. So there is a lot there. I mean, and often satires are sort of universalising, aren't they? So that even the satirist is not immune. Is that right?
That's right. The satirist often makes a fool of himself as well as of his targets. And speaking of fools, we are going to kick off today by talking about Desiderius Erasmus's Praise of Folly from 1511, which is a satire on most of 16th century life in the voice of personified folly herself.
So, Claire, why don't you talk us through the structure of The Praise of Folly? Give us a sense of what kind of work it is, and then I'll say a little bit about the context of it and where it comes from in Erasmus's life.
Yeah, so The Praise of Folly is a speech, an encomium, spoken by Folly herself. She's a persona. And essentially, she's describing the madness of the whole world as Erasmus knew it. And the text kind of works in three parts. First, in probably the most fun bit, Folly describes the universality of folly among mortals and how needful it is that we are, that we do lapse into folly to survive the human condition. So the happiness that folly brings and the necessary kinds of forgetting that folly enables. So she says, is anyone happier than the sort of men who are usually called fools, dolts, simpletons, nincompoops? Actually very fine titles, as I see it. And she runs through various examples of how mortals get by being fools. So for instance, she says that women would never go through childbirth again if they didn't forget the first time how awful it was. So their forgetting becomes necessary, quite literally, to the extension of human life. Then there's a second section, which is more programmatic, in which folly runs through social groups who all hold weighty social responsibilities. So princes, lords, popes, priests.
And she says, no one is spared.
Absolutely no one is spared. And the high status people come in for more attacking than low status. And she says that people like this get by using folly to forget their weighty responsibilities. You know, wouldn't a prince collapse under the weight of his responsibility if he actually thought about it, if he actually thought about the kinds of importance he had? If a pope really behaved like a pope should, wouldn't he, you know, he wouldn't manage to survive either. So all of them rely on folly to get by.
It's true about politicians, isn't it? I mean, they have to have that kind of insensitivity to what they are in order to be what they are.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's all true. Yeah,
it is all true.
Sorry, carry on.
No. I mean, the third section is possibly we'll come to it later, but it makes this quite radical claim that Christianity itself... So I should say that in the second section, theologians and men of the church come in for a particular attack. But in the third section, Folly says that Christianity and Christ is foolish, is a species of folly. But we better have some background before we get into it. Colin, who was Erasmus?
Well, at this point, I have to reach for under my desk for a prop, which Claire knows nothing about, but it is actually...
Oh, no.
I've got a little fool's cap with bells.
This is unbearable.
I'll put it back, because otherwise it'll interfere with talking about Erasmus, who's a very serious person.
Thanks for listening to this extract from On Satire, a close reading series from the London Review of Books. To listen to the full episode and all our other close reading series, sign up to our close reading subscription at lrb.me/close readings or click on the link in the description.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.